The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra, and for the first time in years, a fun and entertaining qualifier involving England, a 5-3 win over Kosovo with missed penalties, defensive blunders and glorious attacking, and for the first time in 3 days, a disappointing home defeat for Scotland. Meanwhile, a spirited Northern Ireland go down at home to Germany while Ronaldo scores 4 and there are friendly wins for Wales and Ireland. We'll spend some time speaking to Marvin Sordell on why he's retired at 28, and we'll look ahead to the return of the Premier League, answer your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. We begin with a question from David. In exactly 9 months, Euro 2020 will begin. How enticing is the idea of 2 weeks paternity leave during this time window? Can we expect panel baby announcements in 3 months' time? Barry Glendening.
Certainly not from me, unless it's some sort of immaculate conception.
Lars Sivertsen.
Hi, Max.
Hello. Are you planning to would you have a baby in 9 months?
No.
Okay, why not?
For so many reasons, Max.
Okay. A pod debut for Marvin Sordell. Marvin, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. And
okay.
You?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for coming. You have two young children. Would you like another one?
No. Okay. Not at this time, especially.
But you're happy with the ones that you have?
Yeah, they're great.
Okay, good.
Which one is your favourite?
The one who sleeps.
Look, we're going to get on to your retirement. One quick question, though. Are you available for Alexandra Park 3's at home on Saturday, 2 o'clock kickoff, £12. You need black shorts and red socks.
On Saturday, I'm not available. Actually, okay. I played football with my friend and his team on Saturday, and I'm very sore still.
Okay, so you're not fit enough.
No.
Okay, fine. You're not in my plans.
But it is bad news for your friend's opponents when you turn up, surely.
Well, except I haven't done any running for many, many months, and my legs were very, very sore after about 15 minutes.
Do you lose it that quickly?
Yeah. I think it's because I'm used to doing it every single day, and then I haven't done it for 4 or 5 months.
Have you been to the gym? Are you keeping yourself?
No. I've not done, literally, and since April, I've done 2 short runs and played football on Saturday.
Have you done more exercise in the last 5 months, Barry?
Wow.
I mean, Marvin looks in better nick than you.
Well, he's sort of going to balloon out while as I go in.
Well, now
for the world to function, the two of you need to be a certain weight.
He's the yang to my ying.
So if Marvin puts on a pound, you lose one. But otherwise, you have to stay as you are. Excellent. Right, let's start then with England 5, Kosovo 3 at St Mary's. Aaron says, do you feel a bit daft, Max, for promising nothing will happen in the first 25 minutes of England-Kosovo? I meant to say the first 25 seconds. After that sort of San Marino-like moment, and then we conceded that goal after, 34 seconds, it was a sort of straightforward win, Lars. Great going forward, not so great the other way.
I mean, there are very few wins that are straightforward when you can see 3 goals, right? And I this Kosovo team is a lot of fun. I think a lot of people will warm to them, and they have a real chance of qualifying, which would be amazing. And they have so many both technically accomplished, confident players. It can be a bit iffy tactically. Their new coach has worked on that, but they're not a team you should take lightly ever if you look at some of these guys. So England got the job done. Obviously, there were some defensive goofs, I guess you could say, and that's not great, but any qualifier you win comfortably is fine, I guess.
Marvin, conceding a goal that early is quite a deflating experience, isn't it? But for Kosovo, right? Just for that team and those fans, that moment is amazing, right?
Yeah, but you look at team like Kosovo scoring against England, playing away to England. At times, they probably thought, was that goal too early?
I mean, it was very early. you're saying they wait another 20
again,
seconds.
When you're presented that chance, you don't want to miss it. So yeah, thinking, like, this is too early. Better not score now.
But you think for a team like that, they probably want to keep it tight and keep, I think them scoring probably woke England up. And, England were very, very quickly to react.
Maybe that was Michael Keane's plan. He's just think this is we need a shot to the arm here now. It's not started well. I'm just going to give him a goal.
I mean, there were problems in defence, Barry. I mean, but I sort of feel I want to be positive before I'm negative about that performance, because going forward, England are just so much fun, aren't they?
Yeah, their front three is up there with the best in the world, you'd have to say, I think. And it was an enjoyable sort of white-knuckle ride of a game. And I'm sort of with you insofar as people have been quick to pounce on the negatives. There were negatives, and they need to be fixed, because better teams than Kosovo will take advantage of England's shortcomings. But I love watching Kane and Sancho and...
Raheem Sterling.
Raheem Sterling, yes, I knew I'd forget one of them. They're fantastic to watch, you know, and you've Marcus Rashford on the fringes. It looks like it's Jadon Sancho's place to lose at the moment, but who knows?
The guy in the cafe beneath where I live, the restaurant, is a Kosovan called Kadri, and he went to the game, and he said, like, after Kosovo scored, he cried, and he didn't think he'd cried, and he doesn't watch a lot of football, and he said to me, he said, who is this bullet man, the rabbit? And he was talking about Raheem Sterling. I mean, it's a great description, right? Sterling is just an extraordinary player.
He's been that good for a long time, but I think he may have been doing it for parts of games or a game here and there, whereas now he's doing it literally every single game, and you're seeing how talented he is consistently as well.
I don't know if it's a criticism of Southgate, but it's suggesting that, look, you've got this amazing front three, whether you play Rashford or Sancho along with Sterling and Kane, but behind them you could be more interesting. You could pick a more interesting set of players.
I think that's a totally fair criticism, and if not picking a more interesting set of players, at least experimenting with more interesting players before you decide that the dreary option is the one for you. Southgate keeps stressing the need, winning the game is the most important thing. I don't necessarily agree. England are going to qualify, and if they lose one or two games along the way, I don't think that is a huge problem. Chances are they wouldn't lose games, even if they did experiment and he threw in James Maddison, for example, or...
Harry Winks, maybe?
Harry Winks is another, yes. And what I don't really understand his reluctance to give them game time and have a look at them. Obviously, he sees them in training. Maybe he's not impressed with what he sees in training. But I find it quite baffling that he doesn't experiment more.
Marvin, if you were Gareth Southgate, well, who would your three be?
I think Rice would be holding midfielder. Jordan Henderson as well.
So you're going Dreary and Ross Barkley?
At this stage, I'd probably say James Maddison.
And why would you pick them over Winks or Mason Mount?
Declan Rice is one of the best in his position, I think.
Is that good?
I think he's very good at reading the game and distributing the ball when he wins it back very quickly. And he, with his passes, he breaks the lines very, very quickly. And I think sometimes people don't see the kind of passes he makes and just sees, it's a simple pass because he's played it forward. Whereas sometimes a player might take the option to play it sidewards or backwards or just, you know, slowly maintain possession. Whereas when he wins it back, more often than not, he quickly tries to play his attacking players, whether it's the number 10 or the wide players or striker, and takes players out of the game with his pass, which is another thing that Harry Maguire does so well.
I agree. I think Rice is your best shout for the holding midfielder there. And Henderson is a logical choice for someone who can contribute both ends, can cover a lot of ground. And then the third spot is where maybe you'd like to see a more interesting choice than Barkley. Because I think I get why so many managers are willing to give Barkley time, because he has so much. Like, he's technically very good, physically very good. If you can get it together a little bit more with him, you can see how he can be a very, very effective midfielder. But with the form Maddison has shown in the league, I think he's unlucky not to get a look in at all there. You can make a case for Winks as well, though he's a bit more of a conservative sort of holder type as well. But I think we've disagreed about this before, Barry. I see the logic in picking, in inverted commas, boring teams in qualifier, because I think giving these guys minutes together on the pitch is inherently valuable. The big challenge of international football is that the players don't train every week like you do for club sides. So developing a chemistry, developing an understanding between you is a hard thing to do. You don't really have the time to do it. So actually having a pretty settled squad throughout the qualifiers, while it's a little bit boring for us because we want to see new and exciting names on the team sheet for games they'll probably win anyway, I think there is an inherent value to giving these guys as many minutes on the pitch together as possible.
And another hard thing is ITV had Glenn Hoddle and Lee Dixon saying it's really difficult to learn how to defend when in all these qualifying games you have the ball all the time.
That's a very fair point. Absolutely. And that might be part of the reason why England do this thing where they... Because they have a phrase, I think in Italian football they use a lot, that teams who enjoy suffering or are good at suffering. I think England are maybe not always good at that. I mean, England breeze through the qualifiers very, very casually often, or have done in recent cycles. And when they're put under pressure in tournaments, both in terms of football, in terms of coming under pressure, also in terms of the mental aspect of that, that's something they struggle with, and it's hard to replicate that. You can arrange high-profile friendlies with big nations, but it's not going to be the same anyway.
Garth says, just a request that the pod never again discuss at length how beautiful an England player takes a penalty. not immediately before a game or tournament, at least, or in fact, maybe wait until the player in question has retired. It wasn't just us. Clive Tilsley in commentary said, and Harry Kane is going to show us his party piece. Although, you know, VAR would have chalked it off, wouldn't it?
Well, he doesn't miss too many, does he? So if you are going to miss one, might as well do it in a game you're winning quite comfortably.
The manager of Kosovo, who is good fun, actually, isn't he? Did anybody see the clip of him?
Yes.
Absolutely raging until the TV camera, he noticed, was on him, and then he smiled. That was just so so funny.
They were a really interesting team, and I think I'm not going to say this just because I'm from Norway, but two of their better players on the night, Valen Berisha and Bassan Celina, actually grew up in Norway, and I think they're typical of a lot of these guys. A lot of them are people whose families had to move, whose parents had to move, and I think, certainly speaking to one of them a couple of months back, I think the it means more to them than I think the international team does for a lot of other countries, because they are very aware of the sacrifices their parents had to make for them to have a safe upbringing. They're very aware of how much it means to everyone. So a lot of these are players who could have played for other European countries. Some of them are players who have actually played for other European countries. And for whatever reason, they ended up declaring for Kosovo. I think it's something that means a lot to them, and I think you can see that.
The manager, Kosovo manager Bernard Challens, he says England are one of the best teams, if not the best in the world. Marvin, we're going to win the Euros.
we're definitely one of the best teams in the world. And I think what Gareth Southgate has done better than most other England managers of recent times is created a team, a squad environment, whereas previously we had very high profile, very talented individuals. And slowly but surely it's coming together. I think we're still in a transitional period. See, England have a lot of very talented young players. This next Euros, it might come too soon, potentially. But I think the World Cup, the Euros after that, I think we're looking very strong.
It's interesting because you played England under 21s, you played in the Olympics 2012.
Yeah.
And so that idea of, you must have been in squads that felt right and ones that didn't at international level.
More so that didn't. I've played in a lot of teams, and international football is very different to club football in the sense that, you know, normally it's the players who are in form for their clubs just get picked and thrown together. You play a game, you're together for 10 days, you play two games, you train and you go home. And then the next time you meet up in a month's time, maybe a completely different group again. And so what I think Gareth Southgate has been very strong with as well, I think in the media it's probably been, you know, people have said, why have you not called up this player, that player, they're showing club form. But to be able to create a successful team, you have to create a team that are used to playing with each other, know each other's personalities and understand each other. You have to create a squad environment that is similar to when they're at their clubs, and that's what he's done. That is completely different to other England managers of past, but is similar to a lot of other international managers that have been successful recently. You know, you look at Germany, for example, and the way they use Podolski. You know, that's you know, he didn't play a lot of club football, but he's a World Cup winner. Yeah. And they had a squad that was pretty much together for, you know, quite a few years. And they ended up becoming successful, I think, because they were developing together and understanding each other more and, you know, just improving together as well.
We've talked about it a lot, and we were talking about the Scotland squad, weren't we, about, you know, whether players enjoy going. So when you got called up for the 21s, or when you were going, were you looking forward to it, or were you thinking, I better go because it's quite a good thing to do?
No, I mean, for me, every time I was buzzing to be called up because, you know, I always dreamed of playing for England, and fortunately I played for England at under 20 and under 21 level as well. And so for me, I really enjoyed it, but towards, I think I enjoyed it a lot more the early stages, towards the end where, you know, me being called up was probably more of a formality at the time because I was part of the squad, I was playing, you know, I was playing for my club side and, you know, in a bit of form or whatever. And that is when it was a bit more like, you know, I'm not enjoying it so much. The trips aren't really so enjoyable, as in, you know, we go to training in the morning, we come back, we're in our hotel room for the whole day. And that was, you know, every single day for 10 days, and you're in Norway, Iceland, Azerbaijan. And you think, right, I remember one point we came off a plane and I said to one of the boys, we could literally be anywhere in the world now because we don't see an airport. We go on a private plane. We don't go through an airport. We don't actually speak to anybody. We could be literally anywhere in the world, but we're just going to go and play a game. All we see is a hotel football pitch, and then we go.
And if you said you wanted to do like the open top bus around the city or whatever, would you be allowed
see
to?
The no, yeah. I mean, we'd occasionally get an opportunity to go out and do something during the day, but, you know, very rarely. And I think that's it seems to have changed, you know, in the under 21s at senior level. It seems to be very different now. It's more a club feel. You know, I was at the PFA lunch last week and John Terry was speaking about when he was playing for England and the same thing, that every day's so mind-numbing, and yet when you're playing for your club side, you're trusted to go to training, you go home and you go for a coffee or go see friends or family or whatever. And
you're not imprisoned for a whole season.
Well, yeah. Locked up.
I find this baffling. Like, you're grown men.
Yeah.
And you know, I come into work and then I leave and I do whatever I want. You seem, it's not almost as if you're confined to barracks. You're literally, you can't just go, oh, I'm going for off to visit the local castle or have a walk around the square and have a coffee. Or you're not allowed, or it's just not the done thing.
I mean, you just weren't really allowed to go out. We had quite a lot of meetings as well, so.
That's astonishing.
That was like part one of The Life and Times of Marvin Sordell. We'll do more at part three. Also in that group, Czech Republic won 3-0 in Montenegro. England need one more win to qualify. The next international break is in October. Northern Ireland 0, Germany 2. I thought Northern Ireland played really well in this game, Lars, and had their chances, didn't they, in the first half?
They really did. And they're an example, I think, of what we've been talking about, of a team who seem to know each other really well and have a good sort of, I mean, they're almost like watching a club side in the sense that they clearly know each other's strengths and weaknesses. They clearly like play to each other's abilities and have a really tight knit thing. And even though they're not like huge names on the team sheet, they're really difficult to play against for pretty much anyone.
Bailey Peacock Farrell, and I was waiting, Barry, for the transfer that happened that I hadn't noticed had happened, who moved from Leeds to Burnley, but that completely passed me by. Looks about 8. Had a great game in goal.
He did, yes. He's a good keeper. I kind of feel sorry for Northern Ireland. The fixtures, the way they've come up, so they had their 4 must win, which they won, and now they've lost against Germany. I think it's another game against Germany, 2 against the Netherlands coming up. You know, it's going to be difficult for them, but they're almost guaranteed a playoff place regardless.
This isn't the moment where you do your explanation of the playoff place.
Do I have to?
Come on then.
I could devote all of part 2 to that. Well, I think at this stage, people either understand the Nations League qualifiers, or if they don't by now, they're probably not interested enough to. But it looks like Northern Ireland should be guaranteed a place if they don't finish in the top 2 in the group, and it'd be no more than they deserve. I appreciate I'm not really answering your question about Bailey Peacock Farrell. Yes, he played well. I'm not sure what more I can add. And
I just wanted acknowledgement.
Yeah, if Connor Washington had perhaps put away one of the chances in the first half, it all could have ended very differently. But it was a decent performance by Northern Ireland, and Michael Neal's clearly a very good manager.
That goal, Marvin, from Marcel Hastenberg was just glorious, wasn't it?
Yeah, technically superb.
Yeah, it reminded me of a bit of that Gareth Bale volley, I think, against Stoke for Spurs, and a tiny bit of the Pavard's, you know, just hitting across the ball. I loved it so much. Producer Jonathan makes a point. Was Connor Washington missing that early chance an example of being aware that scoring too early could have been a huge disadvantage?
You're completely wrong.
Jonathan Wilson, he as a Sunderland fan, he's a firm believer that you can definitely score too early. I remember being at the playoff final to Sunderland Charlton back in just before summer started, and Charlton gifted Sunderland that opener like really early doors, and I was just sitting my head in my hands going like, no, please God, no. I knew
too early. That's why they did it.
Well, it was an own goal.
It's like 2-0 is a 2-0 is more dangerous than 0-0, isn't it? Dangerous scoreline.
I think we're going to see this, a slew of teams scoring own goals early on, just to, you know, put the cat amongst the pigeons. I'd love to see, I haven't been able to find it, but I think Northern Ireland, Germany is one of those games where XG might come into its own. Because if you look at just the shot statistics, actually, Germany produced 21 shots to Northern Ireland's 4. Which just wasn't the impression you got from, because Northern Ireland looked so much more dangerous, and it seemed like their chances were from much better positions. I've looked, but I haven't been able to find the XG for that game. If someone out there has them, I think that would be very interesting, because I suspect Northern Ireland's finishes were from much more dangerous positions.
Just to be clear, if you do have the XG for that game, Lars would like them. I don't want them. Barry?
Nope.
Marvin?
I'm okay, thanks.
Okay.
The sort of anti-intellectualism of English football that is, you know, now, served you so poorly over the years.
Producer back. Jonathan has sent me a tweet, pass maps and XG plot for Northern Ireland against Germany. XG, Northern Ireland 0.95, Germany 2.27.
Oh,
well, so I take it back. Fascinating.
That is actually interesting. Is it? Maybe our impression of that game was completely wrong, and I should watch it again.
Also in that group, Ryan Babel scored twice as the Netherlands won 4-0 in Estonia. Germany, Northern Ireland, a joint top. The Netherlands 3 points behind. But as Baz said, Northern Ireland's fixture list is pretty tricky. It's Holland, Germany. Right, Scotland 0, Belgium 4. Lukaku, Vermaelen, Alderweireld, all assisted by Kevin De Bruyne before he scored himself. We talked about how great Sterling is. I mean, people have said De Bruyne might be the difference in the Premier League this season, Marvin. Is he that good?
For City to win the league over Liverpool?
Yeah.
He is that good. I mean, there's no question. Liverpool are very, very strong this year, though. And they were very strong last year. And any other year, they would have won it.
So is Liverpool your tip, do you think?
Potentially,
that's,
actually.
That's not a total tip, is it?
It's not a total tip.
Potentially could be City.
City are just, I think they've been doing over the last 2 years, they've made it seem like every game they just go out and win. And because they've won the league, everybody just expects them to win and the way they win. Whereas Liverpool last year was just so strong, and this year, obviously, they've started off on the same note. But still, City are just so consistent, have so much talent, have so much depth in their squad. Whereas Liverpool don't have quite as much depth as Man City do. So if they get one or two injuries to key players, that could massively swing in Man City's favour.
I'd like to put this to you, like, because listeners will have heard me go on about this before. I'm so fascinated by De Bruyne because he can do so many different things. Like, here's a guy who has immaculate passing, both long and short, with both legs, who's quick enough and skillful enough to go past people, and shoots very well with both legs, and crosses very well with both legs. Like, when you're playing as a defender, like, you weren't a defender, obviously, but usually you have an idea of roughly what your opponent wants to do, and you want to deny him a chance to do that. If it's a guy who's good at going past people, you give him some space, you don't get too tight. If it's a guy who's great at passing the ball, you push up a little bit to not give him time. what on earth do you do when you come up against De Bruyne? Because he can do anything, and he can do anything really well. He can hurt you in just every possible way.
I mean, his strongest attribute is his intelligence and decision-making, by far. You know, he's got all the talent in the world, but he's a player who just knows when to use each different attribute that he has. You know, whether it's defenders might think to him, I'm going to go really tight, and because he may not be as physically strong or as quick as me, but then he'd play it off one touch because he's technically good enough to do that. He'd play it off one touch and receive the pass, and then he'll have time to get the ball back, and actually he'll know where his next pass is. And so that's why he's so difficult to play against, is because he's so intelligent and he understands the game better than a lot of players he comes up against.
And there's not like there's a weaker foot you can put him onto.
Yeah,
like, exactly. It's just, I mean, ridiculous.
Even if he literally only used his right foot, he'd be intelligent enough to manipulate the ball, the players around him, to be able to get it back onto his right foot anyway.
So Scotland have won just one of their past 14 games against Belgium. Steve Clarke's lost three of his first four matches in charge, two clean sheets in 10. It's not looking great, Baz, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, Northern Ireland lost against Germany, but can take immense credit from their performance. Scotland have just been beaten by Russia and Belgium, and you know, that's, you would expect them to lose those games, really, and can take very little pride from their performances because they were dismal in both games. There are people already calling for Steve Clarke's head. I think that's ridiculous. He's only been in the job, what's it, four games, mm-hmm. He's had. He seems to have a squad that's unmotivated. There are some good players in it, but I'm not sure what can he do. And if they were to get rid of him, who would replace him? You know, any time the Scotland job is up for grabs, it's a very dispiriting collection of candidates. Steve Clarke is a good manager. I don't think there's any doubting that, but you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. Well, I suppose you actually probably can.
Michael O'Neill
has made a silk purse out of a sow's ear, but
you can make a very good purse.
Steve Clarke hasn't really been in the job enough to have an impact. I've said all along that this playoff place they've been guaranteed from the Nations League might be something the players would always have in the back of their mind. Well, we've got this thing to fall back on. It doesn't matter how we get on the group. The way they're going, the playoff place will be no use to them because they'll be beaten in the playoffs.
And just to go back to your Nations League spreadsheet, that they will automatically have a semi-final place?
A one-legged semi-final place against, it depends who, but it will be by no means easy for them.
But like, will it be against a good team, or will there be any good teams in the
playoffs? It'll be against a fairly mediocre team, but any mediocre team has a very good chance of beating Scotland. I mean, the damage was done to Scotland before Steve Clarke took charge of them in this group. They got mullered by Kazakhstan away from home, and that was just an embarrassment.
Right, Belgium atop, 6 wins from 6, Russia 3 points behind. They needed a last-minute winner to get past Kazakhstan, and that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll round up the rest of the Euro qualifiers. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Thanks for coming if you came to see us in Manchester. We're in Leeds next Friday night. It's sold out, but we are hoping to be back in Leeds before Christmas. Rounding out the rest of the Euros, France 3, Andorra 0. Antoine Griezmann missed another penalty. That's 2 in 2 games. And Moussa Sissoko almost scored, which was nice. A good header. They hit the bar. Albania beat Iceland 4-2, and Tufacenk Tosin as Turkey won in Moldova 4-0. Turkey and France are top, 3 points clear of Iceland. In Group B, Ronaldo scored 4 or 3. Did anybody see his second goal? It was brilliant. The keeper, he sort of hit a 25-yard P-roller that was going wide, and the goalkeeper managed to palm it into the air and then head it in. But currently it's still being given, I think, to Ronaldo. He scored 8.
If it was going wide, it should be an own goal.
I don't know how the dubious goals panel have done in Lithuania.
It was really bad. Like, 4 goals is always great, but there was one penalty. There was that. There was a cross that sort of he kind of shinned on that might have gone in anyway, and there was one very good finish. But I thought the Portugal coach said afterwards that it was. He seemed to suggest that this was irrefutable evidence that he's the best player in the world. which is...
Surely Marvin Strikers Union said they all count, right?
They all count, yeah.
He has scored 8 international hat-tricks and scored against 40 different countries, which is quite impressive, isn't it? Luxembourg won Serbia 3-2 for Mitrovic. Ukraine still 5 points clear in that group. Portugal have a game in hand. And Group G, Poland, who are top, drew 0-0 with Austria, who are now third. Slovenia moved up to second with a 3-2 win over Israel. Barry, your Irish brethren hammered Bulgaria 3-1. First international goals for Alan Brown, Kevin Long and Luton's James Collins. And Jack Byrne, who plays for Shamrock Rovers, played well. How enthused are you with mixed men?
Pretty enthused. I mean, they're not particularly good to watch, but they're top of their group. And that obviously was just a friendly, so it's kind of irrelevant, but it's nice that they're blooding new players. Ireland find themselves in this weird position, which Emmett Malone highlighted in the Irish Times. Because of John Delaney, you know, the comedy FAI former president / chief executive, whatever he is now, I think he's on gardening leave from that position. Arranged in such a way that Mick McCarthy, no matter how well he does at the Euros, assuming Ireland qualify, and even qualification would be considered quite a success, it leaves after the tournament. And Stephen Kenny, who is in charge of the under-21s, who are also doing very well and looking set fair to qualify for their first finals, is, you know, they have this succession plan in place, which where Stephen Kenny takes over. Apparently, Mick McCarthy is very unhappy with this.
Is he?
Yeah, by all accounts. And you could end up in a situation where, say, Ireland get to the quarters, semi-finals of the Euros. It's unlikely, but it's possible. And he, or say, even win the tournament, and he has to leave to make way for this guy who may have steered the under-21s to their first ever finals, but won't be able to manage them at it because he will have to take over from Mick McCarthy. So it's all very weird. Apparently, none of the parties involved are particularly thrilled about it, but they're just getting on with it.
But Max, is Mick McCarthy suddenly unhappy about it now? I mean, surely this was the thing it's literally what he signed up for.
Yeah, he hasn't vocalised any dissent, but he's not thrilled about it.
Okay, maybe he should have turned down the whole arrangement then when it was offered to him.
Possibly.
Wales beat Belarus 1-0, another goal for Dan James. Elsewhere, a violent game between Argentina and Chile in Los Angeles. Paolo Dybala, Lautaro Martinez and Spurs' Giovanni Lo Celso all caught above the ankle with studs. Lo Celso's out for 6 weeks after sustaining a hip injury. And Peru ended Brazil's 17-match unbeaten run with a 1-0 friendly win, also in LA. Mo says, quick word on Somalia, who got knocked out of 2022 World Cup qualifiers by Zimbabwe. Somalia led 1-0 from the first leg, their first ever win in World Cup qualifiers. Zimbabwe won 3-1 in the second leg with two goals coming in the last few minutes. And Gus says, can you all please talk about how we, India, drew with the Asian champions Qatar in World Cup qualification? They're ranked some high 60s in the world, apparently, and we're 100. It was a huge result for us. Lars, would you like to represent all of us in talking about that?
I didn't see it, so that would be sort of disingenuous of me. But I'm keen to note that they're actually managed by Derby and West Ham legend Igor Seamuch, which I wasn't aware of. He's in charge of India now, and apparently seems to be doing a good job. Got a result against Qatar.
I was so happy for them that I booked a trip there yesterday.
Did you? Where are you going to go?
India.
Okay. Whereabouts? If any of our India fans, if you're doing a tour.
I'm not doing a tour, I'm going on holiday.
Okay, you don't want to talk to anybody?
Not particularly.
Okay, fine. That'll do for part two. In part three, we'll begin talking to Marvin about why he's decided to retire at the age of 28. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Marvin, let's talk about you for a bit. You retired this summer at 28, which is quite early to retire, and not because of injury, right?
It is fairly early, yeah. I just didn't enjoy being a professional football player anymore. So I decided to not be a professional football player anymore.
Was it a very straightforward decision?
It was straightforward in that sense that I didn't want to carry on doing it because it didn't make me happy anymore. So, yeah.
Do you think there are other players who probably don't enjoy it but don't almost have the confidence to say, hang on, this is not what I want to be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken to quite a few players, you know, that I've played with throughout my career, and some have said that they wish they could make the same decision that I've made, because, you know, they've hated it for quite some time, but they don't see that it's possible for them to do anything else, or there isn't anything there they can just walk straight into. You know, I'm quite fortunate that I've been working in with my production company for some time now, and we're slowly making progress in that.
I mean, did you write a list of pros and cons of retiring or not? Did people advise you to do it? I wonder if anyone said, look, you're 28, you could do another 5-6 years and, you know, bank that money and then go on to what you want to do.
Yeah, a lot of people said that. A lot of people said just carry on and you know, just even if you hate it, just, you know, earn your money. But, and I said, for quite some time, I haven't enjoyed it. And so I wanted to make a decision now that was just purely based on how I felt, and going away from football is what has made me happy, and it was what I knew was going to make me happy, so I made that decision.
Can you put a finger on what wasn't making you happy about being a footballer?
I can. There's a lot to being a professional football player that's more than just playing football, and it was really and truly, it was just playing football that for me was something that I maintained, that I enjoyed, and I want to continue to enjoy that, you know, moving forward in the rest of my life. And I love the game, I love the passion, and but there are a lot of politics, and, you know, people get abused, there's racism, and a lot of the time you have to put on an act, you know, whether you're acting to the public, to fans, to your teammates, to coaches and managers. You have to be something that you're not often, be somebody who you're not. And to be honest, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do that anymore. And I'm enjoying life on this side of things.
You said that over your career, like, a number of managers tried to sort of try to bully you. Does that mean they tried and didn't succeed, or they did?
They didn't, because I bite back, and I have bitten back, and it's been to probably the detriment of my career at times, because I didn't just fall in line in sense. I, you know, just said I didn't believe what they were saying was right, or I didn't feel that how they were acting or trying to treat me was right. And then I was labelled as a problem, you know, said I had an attitude problem, etc. And these are times when I was suffering from depression anyway, and I wanted to have honest conversations with people, especially managers and coaches I had at the time. And often I didn't get honesty, and that's something that you rarely get in football from people, is honesty.
I read somewhere you were going into rehab, and someone from the club you were at rang your mum to tell you not to go.
Yeah, they just said they didn't say I shouldn't go. They just said I need to concentrate on football. Why am I thinking about doing these things when I should concentrate on football?
And is that because, do you think that's because people in football then, and it was only a few years ago, but you sort of feel attitudes are changing, that they just were ignorant about what depression might be, or all they care about was you fulfilling your role as a footballer and not really caring about how you were as a human being?
Yeah, I think that's it. I'm seen as an object that was paid money, and I need to, you know, they paid for an object to do something and it's not currently doing it, so then it needs to do it, and by any means. And that's how I feel football players are sometimes seen, as just a price and just an highly expensive object.
Do you think there is an old school football mentality which is the only way you can tell if someone's depressed if they're literally, you know, they're sort of lying on the floor having
a
meltdown?
Yeah, that's quite ridiculous, really. I think, no, I had this conversation with a friend not long ago, and they have suffered from mental health problems, but not to the extent of, you know, depression, suicide. And I said, well, people talk about mental health, the first thing that people go to is depression and suicide, the complete extreme. And anybody that falls under that just, you know, isn't really taken seriously. So they didn't probably talk about it themselves, because they think, well, I'm not going to be taken seriously, and sometimes that would lead them into depression because they're just getting worse and worse and they're not dealing with it. And yet you wouldn't, you know, mental health is the same as physical health. You know, it's not, you, if you have a cold, you were still ill. You know, you might not have had pneumonia, but you were still ill. You still say that you were ill because you had a cold. It might go in a couple of days. It might, you might need medicine for it. You might not. It might just get better. But it's the same as mental health. You know, I think sometimes we look at only the extremes and don't think there are, it's a scale that needs to be understood and just looked after, really.
You've got a campaign called Let's Shirt Talk with Calm, and it's a mental health charity. Tell us about that.
So, I wanted to do something. You know, Calm are a great charity. They do some amazing, really engaging campaigns that talked about widely. And I have a lot of football shirts, you know, from players that I played with and against throughout my career. So I thought it made sense for me as a football player coming out of football as well to use these shirts, create a raffle, and use that raffle as the vehicle to get people talking about mental health more, which, you know, we launched on World Suicide Prevention Day, which was Tuesday the 10th. And I really didn't expect how much traction it was going to get. It you know, we put out some videos and they've had hundreds of thousands of views and a lot of people tweeted about it, which was amazing. And what I was surprised about is not many people were actually as interested in the shirt raffle itself, which I thought was going to be all people were interested about and not exactly the cause, which the main thing obviously was to create the awareness, which we did massively. And the shirt raffle is actually still going on, funnily enough, and that runs until Tuesday.
Do you think attitudes are changing then?
Yeah, I think so. I think football is probably becoming more in line with society. And obviously society's change and is understanding these things and mental health being one of them. And I think football is slowly catching up to that as well.
You sort of feel attitudes to mental health are improving. With racism, do you feel that it's getting worse?
I don't think it's any different. I think it's been there for a long time. I think these players who are now speaking about it would probably tell you that they had it, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever it is, years ago. Just probably less so because now these players are talking about it. It kind of makes them a target even more so. And opportunists see that the people that are writing these tweets or messages, they're not really getting punished. So more people see that as an opportunity to do something they can get away with because they can get away with it. And that is the problem. So it seems like it's a bigger problem now than it probably was. But I don't think it's changed massively.
And you've experienced it. You were in that under 21 side with Danny Rose, right?
Yeah,
Where was that? In Serbia.
Serbia. That was a surreal experience.
Was that the first time you'd been in a stadium where you'd heard that kind of thing? Or you'd heard that kind of thing in England as well?
Not to that extent. No, that was, you know, I don't think that we will never ever see that, I don't think, anymore in this country where you've got like a whole stadium or whole stand doing monkey chants. That's just not going to happen because people understand that's just completely unacceptable. But that was a very surreal experience. And at the time, I didn't really realize what was going on until, you know, there were breaks in play and someone would go and pick up the ball. And you think, actually, what's this noise that I'm hearing? And it's a bit, I wouldn't use the word upsetting. It's just disappointing, really, that people have these views. Because, you know, myself, this is who I am. This is how I've been born. This is the color of my skin. It doesn't make me any different to anybody else or whatever. This is just what I look like. And it's very sad that some people think somebody's skin color makes them worse, because where you're born, the color you're born is just a complete lottery. and it's just the luck of the draw because no one chooses how they're born.
Is it hard to know how that moment affected you, like at the time or later?
I mean, at the time I was quite angry, but I think since I'm just, like I said, I'm just disappointed really that, and it's a bit sad for other people in the world to think like that, because it just makes them very narrow-minded. You know, they're probably never going to explore the same kind of things that I am able to, because they won't allow themselves to do so.
And, you know, do you think now teams should walk off the bench? Do you feel like at the time, you know, if you'd had your chance again, if you go back to that moment, the team should have walked off?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the only way to actually make a strong statement. You know, people have said, just carry on playing, rise above it. It's not worked. It just hasn't. So try something different. And that impact of a big team walking off, you know, maybe if it was at the World Cup or the Euros, for example, that would make a big statement to FIFA and UEFA to actually do something.
You seem like, you know, you're totally sure you've made totally the right decision, but there must be things that you miss or you will miss from the game. No,
just playing.
Yeah,
that's it. And I can play somewhere else. You know, I can play with my friends and
Southern Amateur League Intermediate Division 4.
There will be people listening who think, yeah, you're going to be a long time retired. You'll regret this decision in years to come. Do you think you will?
No, I'll never regret it because I had a fantastic career. You know, I was a professional for 10 years. That was my dream. I was very privileged to be able to live my dream. And I'm so much happier. You know, if I carried on in the direction I was going, I would have been very, very unhappy. And my happiness, it affects the people around me as well as myself. And you know, I've got two young kids and I don't want them to grow up in a home where their dad's unhappy all the time.
Gary says, I'd love to hear a bit from Marvin about the Team GB football squad at the 2012 Olympics. He says, that squad pops into my head every now and then. It was also a question on Pointless a while back. We don't know if you were a Pointless.
I think I was.
You were a Pointless answer.
Yeah, I didn't actually watch the episode, but I've been tweeted at before, yeah.
Huh. Is that a badge of honour or not? I can't work that out. Was that a...
I don't know.
Was that an amazing thing to do, to be part of the Olympics? I mean, it was an interesting and squad with some great players in it.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience because I think for me, especially you know, growing up in London, being a part of an Olympic Games in your home city is just beyond anything, really. And especially the fact that it was a team that was just put together from you know, multiple nations as opposed to... It was so different than going up, being called up as an international playing for England.
Who was the gaffer? Stuart Pearce?
Stuart Pearce, yeah.
Was he good?
Giggsy, yeah. Bellamy, Scott Sinclair.
Ramsey was in there.
Aaron Ramsey. Mick Richards.
Yeah. Was it kind of like a jolly for you? You know, most people at the Olympics, this is like literally everything that they've built their whole career for.
It was really, really, like we wanted to win. That's why we were there. I mean, I don't think any team really goes there and says, yeah, we're just here for the fun of it. We wanted to win. We were the host nation and we wanted to go as far as possible.
And you said you've got a production company.
Yep.
What are you going to make? Do you need a greying vanilla broadcaster to host your... he's not going to play for me. No,
well,
tell us.
I might play for you. You don't know yet.
Ah, wicked.
Wait till my legs recover.
I think selection or strength committee might have an issue. We'll just call you Dave Wilmot and it'll be fine. tell us about your production company.
So we have two friends. We launched 180 Productions quite a few months ago. We've been making things for some time together. My two friends have made music videos because one's a musician, one's a videographer, cinematographer by trade, and you know, I've written poetry. We've made a couple of short films, including Dennis Prose, and we came together and have been doing this for some time. We thought, actually, let's do something official. Let's create a company where we can actually, as well as just doing our own passion projects, we can do bigger things and go beyond that. And at the moment, we're very lucky in the sense that we've got quite a few things in the pipeline. We're doing a documentary, a mental health special with IMG. We're speaking with Channel 4 and Netflix about a docuseries. And then there are a couple other documentaries that we want to do that are passion projects. One is one we did a trailer for. It's called For the Culture, which you can probably see on my Instagram account or the company Instagram account, which is a passion project of mine. It's just something to give the youth of today inspiration from people who have been in their shoes and have become successful.
Ah, look, it all sounds great. Right.
Sounds like your weekly column, Max, a sort of passion project where you just write about yourself.
The thing is, Barry, I think I'm going to write like a really incisive bit of journalism, and then I find Marina Hyde has done that already.
But you could do it so much better. Well, she's just a hack.
So then I write another nostalgic piece about why I like playing football or something. And anyone who was in Manchester who heard the first ever reading of my crime novel with Detective Jonathan Wilson, you can be honest, it's one of the worst things that's ever been written, isn't it?
It's pretty bad.
I don't understand what you were going for.
No, I don't know either.
Was it an attempt at satire?
I don't think it was.
If nothing else, you're certainly banned from making fun of Steve Bruce's books.
Absolutely.
You can't laugh at them anymore.
He is above
me. You produced something that's a lot worse.
See, I'm a worse.
Because Brucey's, I mean, they're, I have one of them. My partner gave me a signed copy for Christmas or birthday once. Very good. And they are really funny, like unintentionally so, probably, but they're really good.
But he's also,
I wouldn't say that yours was.
No, and I only done 600 words. Anyway, Premier League is back. Liverpool, Newcastle's the early kickoff. Brighton play Burnley. I think Manchester United, Leicester, Barry, is an interesting game in that. Who's dropping out of the top six and who's coming in? Who has the better starting 11 and who has the better squad, do you reckon?
Well, Manchester United have beset by quite a lot of injuries. There's a few players in doubt for the weekend. Luke Shaw is out. Anthony Martial, Paul Pogba and Aaron Wan-Bissaka are all a bit meh, maybe not. On the face of it, I think Leicester will win this game. I'm not hugely confident. I wouldn't, but if someone put a gun to my head and I had to save my own life, I had to pick a winner, I would go for Leicester. And it marks the beginning of an interesting period for both teams because Leicester are home to Spurs next, and Manchester United are away at West Ham, home to Arsenal, away at Newcastle, and home to Liverpool. Depending on how this run of games goes for them, Their following match, Norwich away, could be very interesting indeed. And this could be a disastrous time for Manchester United if they continue the way they have been going, which is not playing tremendously well. So I think this is a huge game for both teams as far as laying down their credentials for top five, top four is concerned.
Lars, as a Norwegian, are you fearing for your man and your jog, you know, your professional?
I mean, I was employed also before Solskjaer was at United.
Not as much, though.
Probably. But yeah, I'm a bit worried, yeah. But I think there are challenges at United that are not necessarily to do with him. And I don't want to say exactly what I said about this last week, but I mean, the way they've had a clear out now of players who it was probably good to get them out, players who were either there for the wrong reasons or not good enough, but they've left themselves quite short in a number of departments. And some of these are young, hungry players who could develop and could become top Premier League performers, but they're not yet, some of them. And it's a small squad and it's a tough gig. But also there's not a lot in Solskjaer's life and work to suggest that he is a man who should be managing at this level.
Sheffield United played Southampton.
One of the big questions is, now that his future is sorted for at least a couple of months, will Pochettino go back to starting Eriksen every week? Because I think when they're playing against teams who sit back and compress the space, they're a little bit short on players who are good in tight spaces and good at unlocking the sort of defences. Now, they tried to address this over the summer by signing slightly more technically accomplished midfielders like Ndombele and Lo Celso, who are both helpfully injured. They really need Eriksen now and his skill set. There's a certain logic to trying to get the team used to playing without him, since he's probably leaving sooner rather than later anyway.
But he'll go in January.
But how much money would you get for him realistically in January? You might as well keep him for the last 6 months of the contract then.
Fair enough. Wolves-Chelsea, Norwich-Man City is the late kickoff on Saturday, which I think will be fun, Barry.
Norwich-Man City?
Yeah, I think Norwich will go for it and get hammered 6-2.
And Pep will talk about how great it is to see teams playing so bravely. I mean, he's very complimentary to the teams they thwack.
Yeah, I hope Norwich go in with their usual approach. It could be very ugly indeed, but it should be an entertaining game.
I'm kind of looking forward to Wolves-Chelsea just because of, I mean, Frank Lampard's Chelsea have been good to watch so far. I mean, they're quite attacking in their outlook, maybe too much so. They're quite disjointed defensively. So, I mean, it could be fun.
Sunday sees Bournemouth, Everton and Watford, Arsenal. It's 10 years to the day since Adebayor did arguably the greatest piece of shithousery in the history of football, scoring for Man City. And I was watching it. I mean, he didn't run a huge amount in his career, but his pace over, I mean, he ran the whole length of the pitch to celebrate in front of the Arsenal fans, and the rage on the Arsenal fan. Have you ever, have you cut your ear to the opposition, Marvin, when scoring a goal?
I think once at Mill.
Yeah.
It didn't go down well.
Of all the places to pick, Marvin.
Barney Ronnie had his man, didn't he? Throw something at him.
In Fitbar news, Fort William of the Highland League have won a game for the first time since the 12th of April 2017, ending a 74-game, 882-day wait. They beat Clachnacuddin 1-0 with a second-half goal from 18-year-old Jack Brown. Well done, Jack. In La Liga, Valencia have sacked manager Marcelino.
Oh, my God.
Carry on. They've replaced him with former Real Madrid assistant Albert Celades.
I mean, where do you begin? I mean, Valencia were a basket case for a while under their current owner, Peter Lim, and the double team of Marcelino and their sporting director have kind of steadied the ship, led them to consecutive Champions League finishes, and now they've had clashes with Peter Lim over signings, over which direction the club's going to go in, and Lim has decided to get rid of the fella who's actually brought some stability and sanity into what is an almost permanently, you know, bonkers club.
Will they bring Gary Neville back?
Oh, God, no. No, they brought Celades in, which is like... I mean, Ezequiel Garay, one of their players, was very explicit on Instagram, writing that whoever's made this decision has dragged the club and the fans down or something, he wrote. I mean, this is an extremely unpopular decision for within the squad.
You seem exasperated.
I am, because it's good to have Valencia as a credible force in Spanish football. Like, Mestalla is a great old, if slightly stinky, stadium. And you want to see a historical big name like that succeed. And they've been so badly run for so long, and then in a couple of seasons now, there've been some semblance of stability and prosperity there, and they've just completely put the self-destruct button for no reason at all.
Barcelona they've got on Saturday, which is will be fun, and then Chelsea in the Champions League on Tuesday. Is Champions League back next week, is it? Wow, comes around fast, doesn't it? Leon says, can you please talk about how overrated Paul Scholes was? Is... Better than Anderton and Barmby, but not as good as Gerrard and Lampard. The longer he's retired, the better he gets, now compared to Pirlo and Zidane. I think this comes from... It was Vincent Kompany's testimonial yesterday, which Vincent Kompany was injured, obviously. And Scholes plays this sort of ridiculous pass with the outside of his foot. I sort of feel there has been a rewriting of Paul Scholes. I thought he was brilliant, but maybe on table two, not table one, of footballers of all time. But I said that on the radio once, and I had a disappointing day of notifications. Marvin, where should we put Paul Scholes?
He's up at the top. He is. I mean, he was a focal point for one of the greatest club sides in history. So that's it. You know, I think football is understood differently to probably when he was playing. You know, even the likes of Xavi and Iniesta only really got praise towards the end of their career. And so Paul Scholes retired and he came back, and people are understanding the game slightly differently in the way passes are and possession and things like just different things tactically and technically that people understand and notice more because the game's analysed more. And so people are realising more so how good he was.
Better than Barmby?
Yes.
Lars probably has a graph that shows how good he was.
But no, it is definitely true that he was good at things that were undervalued in English football at the time. Yeah. I think that that's an important point.
Yeah.
I do think some of the sort of... I think some of the praise now goes too far. And it's like when I... The first iteration of this pass I saw was from... I think it was one of Sky's Twitter accounts where they put up the clip. And the text was something, it's Paul Scholes' world and we're just living in it. And I was like, for God's sake, like get the 13-year-olds away from the keyboard and please have some adults doing the social media accounts. You guys, this is nonsense. Mm. But it wasn't a magnificent pass. I think it's just me being a grumpy old man, the sort of modern, if things are, you're either a legend or a fraud. Like, he was a magnificent player who probably didn't get the praise he fully deserved at his time. But he was also maybe not Maradona, is what I'm saying.
No, I agree with that. But if you say that, some people will say you were should never have played
higher than League One. I'm turning off my phone for the afternoon now.
Now, Lars, you have Arda Turan
Euro
news.
Yeah. European football. Arda Turan, former Barcelona midfield technical man, mm-hmm. has been given a 2-year and 8-month suspended sentence in Turkey. I believe the what he has been given the sentence for is firing a gun to cause panic, illegal possession of weapons, and intentional injury, which is of course not an ideal look for a footballer. The story, as it was reported back when it happened, was that he's alleged to have tried to chat up a singer, Berke Şahin's wife, before breaking Berke's nose in the resulting altercation. He then reportedly went to the hospital with a loaded gun. And it was reported at the time that he said, "I didn't know she was your wife. I'm sorry. Just kill me." He denied parts of this story, saying that there was an argument on my day off at the place where I went with my friends. But the reason was not about honor and purity, as was reported. So maybe he didn't try to chat up the fellow's wife. It's hard to say. He's certainly now been convicted for firing a gun to cause panic. And he said afterwards that, "I have learned lessons from these events."
You'd hope so.
You certainly would. Any people firing guns randomly in your career, Marvin?
I spend my days off differently.
Good for you.
Just to cause panic, you know.
Yeah.
There's easy ways to cause some panic.
But... yeah, because it was also suggested initially that the gun went off by mistake, but since he's been convicted for firing the gun to cause... Not a nice thing to do in a hospital anyway. I think there are enough worried people there.
I think not in a hospital, not anywhere. Thank you, Lars, for Arda Turan
Euro
news.
Update.
Finally, Martin says, on the subject of... on the final note on how often people wash their hair, Barry washes hair once a quarter. Jonathan Wilson, not since 2002. Martin says... does Barry add shampoo to his Super Soaker mix so he can wash other people's hair? Is Barry's altruism the reason that he doesn't wash his hair?
No, I don't. I did actually wash and condition my hair yesterday just out of curiosity.
How's
to see
it feel?
Awful. And I've turned into a sort of a Flatley-esque bouffant, which I'm very unhappy with.
I think since Barry now routinely gets called Smelly Head on social media, mm-hmm. I think it's worth saying that during the live show, we did a blind sniff test. We had a member of the audience blindfolded and had them sniff some heads in the panel.
That's what you get if you come to a live show.
Oh, I probably won't do that again, actually, but it was good. And he did think the man who was blindfolded did think that Barry had washed his hair that day, which in fact he hadn't.
And he thought that I hadn't.
Yes. So that's unfortunate for your shampoo maker.
It is.
But it certainly means that Barry's head is not stinky. So that's something.
It's true. Look, that'll do for today. Barry, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Cheers, Lars.
Thanks, Max.
Thanks, Marvin.
Thank you very much.
Come again.
Yeah, it'll be great.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.